At 19, I came out to friends, family and church. Some of it sucked, but mostly it was okay. Still hadn't even kissed a woman yet, but I just knew. Knew what I was, knew what I wanted to do, just couldn't find anyone to do it with.
And in fact, I did in Spain get seduced by a young man named Salvador, and I knew this is who I am, and it's time to stop lying and stop being dishonest and stop living my life to please other people.
Anyway, back to the text.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Brazil translates its anti-phobia campaign for the rest of South America. A comic from Down Under laughs her way out of the closet, and the man behind the mysterious Benjamin Justice is revealed. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Kareem Ferguson.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending October 7th, 2006. Brazil's national anti-homophobia campaign may be adopted by as many as 9 other South American countries. That was the major result of a discussion on sexual orientation and gender identity discrimination during a meeting held recently in Brasilia. Representatives from Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, Bolivia, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, Venezuela, and Chile attended. The Brazilian government also proposed a future seminar to address each country's laws on sexual orientation and gender identity. Minister for Human Rights Paulo Vannucci, who chaired the event, said that a change in political culture must be promoted in the region. A Spanish-language version of the Brazil Without Homophobia program was also introduced at the meeting. Claudio Nascimento, representing the National Council for the Combat of Discrimination, said that the campaign can be reproduced across Latin America and the Caribbean.
Members of the European Parliament's Intergroup on Gay and Lesbian Rights have launched a project to combat homophobic behavior in schools by releasing a report on social exclusion of LGBT youth. It's based on a survey by the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, Queer Youth and Student Organization and the European branch of the International Lesbian and Gay Association. The report included results from a poll of 700 LGBT youth in 37 European countries and found that 61% have experienced prejudice and discrimination at school, 51% at home, and 30% among their friends.
Meanwhile, the Polish government has rejected an application by the national LGBT organization Campaign Against Homophobia to participate in a European Union youth program, saying it does not support actions that aim to propagate homosexual behavior and such attitude among young people. The Polish group had applied for the European Voluntary Service Program run by the European Commission to facilitate cooperation across the continent. It gives young people aged 18 to 25 the chance to spend up to 12 months in another country working as volunteers. Decisions on who can participate are made by national agencies in every EU member state. In rejecting the application of the Campaign Against Homophobia, the Polish National Agency said that the group's aims are against the policy of raising children and youth, which is implemented by the ministry. The decision would appear to contravene a ban on discrimination based on sexual orientation in the European Union and to contradict Prime Minister Jaroslaw Kaczynski's assertion during a recent EU meeting in Brussels that there is no homophobia in his country.
And while California's Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger signed several pro-LGBT bills into law in late September, he vetoed measures to defend students against homophobic bullying and to bar discriminatory portrayals of LGBT people in teaching materials used in the state's public schools. The Safe Place to Learn Act would have provided specific guidelines to California school districts to protect students from harassment and discrimination based on actual or perceived sexual orientation and gender identity. In his veto message, Schwarzenegger called the measure an irresponsible, unfunded state mandate. But Carolyn Laub of the GSA Network, which supports over 550 gay-straight alliance clubs in the state's high schools and middle schools, said that, What's irresponsible is that the governor is ignoring over 200,000 students in California who are bullied based on actual or perceived sexual orientation every year. He's decided that the state of California should do nothing further to protect these students.
The other bill, the Bias-Free Curriculum Act, would have barred school textbooks and instructional materials from negatively portraying gays and lesbians, but Schwarzenegger claimed that the state's education laws already prevent such discrimination. An original version of the measure by out state Senator Sheila Kuehl would have required social science textbooks to include the historical contributions of LGBT people. But after Schwarzenegger preemptively announced that he would veto it before the bill had even been voted on in the legislature, Kuehl revised it to what she believed to be a simple anti-bias bill. She called Schwarzenegger's veto inexplicable, charging that the governor, who's seeking re-election in November, had bowed to a small, shrill group of right-wing extremists. Schwarzenegger has signed bills strengthening domestic partnership laws, adding sexual orientation and gender identity to protected categories in California's fair housing laws, requiring state agencies for the aging to include programs for lesbi-gay seniors, and banning the use of the so-called panic defense in criminal queer-bashing trials.
Equality advocates have vowed to ask the California Supreme Court to review an appeals court ruling this week upholding the state's ban on same-gender marriage. The 2-1 First District Court of Appeal decision reversed a March 2005 decision by a San Francisco trial judge who had ruled that banning same-gender couples from legal marriage is unconstitutional. The appeals court agreed with the state's lawyers, who argued that it's up to the legislature, not the courts, to change the definition of marriage. California lawmakers did just that last year, only to have the bill vetoed by Governor Schwarzenegger. The justices also pointed to the state's strong domestic partnership laws, which give registered gay and lesbian couples most of the same rights as married heterosexual spouses, rejecting arguments from lesbi-gay advocates that such a separate but equal system is discriminatory. Both sides of the marriage equality issue have predicted all along that the California Supreme Court will be the final arbiter.
A feeding frenzy by U.S. media outlets continued this week as more revelations surfaced about Republican congressman from Florida Mark Foley's online dalliances with teenage male congressional pages and his subsequent resignation. Through his lawyer, the former lawmaker finally confirmed the less-than-secret fact that he is indeed a gay man. He tried to explain Foley's actions by invoking a sadly familiar story that the six-term congressman suffered from alcohol abuse and had checked into an unidentified rehab facility. The lawyer also said Foley had been sexually abused by a clergyman during his early teens, though he offered no details. The fact that Foley is a practicing Roman Catholic fueled comparisons with the church's child abuse scandal and cover-up. There have been calls from within his own party for Republican House Speaker Dennis Hastert to resign, even as he insisted that Foley's follies had only come to his attention last week. Several reports have challenged that assertion, claiming that the Republican leadership team suppressed or ignored warnings from staffers about Foley during the past few years in order to protect his congressional seat. Foley had been expected to be easily reelected in the November 7th midterm elections. Some right-wing pundits charged GOP leaders with being afraid of being perceived as gay bashers for not reining in Foley. Almost laughable, considering the Republican record of defeating queer-inclusive hate crimes legislation, forcing into law the Don't Ask, Don't Tell military policy and the so-called Defense of Marriage Act, and the party's current push to add an amendment to the U.S. Constitution to ban same-gender marriage.
Tony Perkins of the rabidly anti-queer Family Research Council issued a statement claiming that the real issue in the Foley scandal was a link between homosexuality and child sexual abuse. Other conservative pundits flooded TV and radio talk shows this week, many falsely claiming that gays are far more likely to be sexual predators than heterosexual men. Some Republican operatives are calling for a purge of gay GOP staff members, saying that a clandestine network of top-level queer congressional aides had shielded Foley from scrutiny. One of many bloggers chiming in on the brouhaha wrote that what's being called the list includes 9 chiefs of staff, 2 press secretaries, and 2 directors of communications. The lesbi-gay Log Cabin Republicans issued a statement saying that the Foley affair should not be used to denigrate gay and lesbian Americans. The anti-gay groups appear more interested in using this situation to score political points than in figuring out exactly what happened in this terrible situation. The National Gay and Lesbian Task Force's Matt Foreman was among several leaders of national queer advocacy groups to condemn such tactics, calling them appalling and that they smack of McCarthyism. A congressional investigation asking who knew what and when did they know it has, of course, been launched, and the FBI is reportedly conducting its own probe.
And finally, the first same-gender civil partnership was contracted this week in the Central European nation of Slovenia, as Mitja Blazik and Vicky Kern registered their union in the capital city of Ljubljana. It was anything but a celebration, however. The current law passed in July was watered down from an earlier, more comprehensive proposal. While it allows gay and lesbian couples to register their unions, it only covers property and inheritance issues and doesn't grant any other rights associated with marriage, including social security or adoption rights. It also bars family and friends from being present during the signing of the registration documents. It looked more like a car registration, not a wedding ceremony, Blazik told reporters, adding that the entire process was awful and humiliating. The couple plans to enter a discrimination complaint with Slovenia's constitutional court, vowing to delay their honeymoon until they prevail.
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 7th, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Kareem Ferguson.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
The creator of Benjamin Justice steps out of the shadows to reveal his own mysteries later in the program. There is reportedly only 1 6-foot lesbian, ex-Mormon, diabetic comedian and author in Australia, and her name is Sue Ann Post. Post launched her career with the multi-award-winning 1991 solo show called A Bit of a Postscript, which was also the title of her first book. Her prose and poetry have appeared in many anthologies, and her long-running column in The Age, one of the country's leading newspapers, was nominated for the 2002 Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission Print Media Award. One of Post's most popular essays is her own coming-out story, which was published in the now-out-of-print anthology Inside Out. She read it especially for the listeners of Queer Radio in Brisbane recently, and now for the rest of us.
Jenny was my closest friend. I thought she was the smartest, funniest, most beautiful girl at school and just could not spend enough time with her. If we'd been apprentice nuns, we would have been busted for having a particular friendship, and they would have been right. I was always a little bit jealous of her boyfriends. She had a particularly volatile relationship with Alan. They were always breaking up and then getting back together. I remember being at a party with them when we were about 16. They had another of their huge arguments and broke up yet again. She ended up crying on my shoulder. As I was hugging her and passing the tissue, she looked up at me and said, "It's not fair. I don't even want to go out with him, really. I'd rather go out with you. It's not fair. Why aren't you a boy?" I had to sadly agree that it wasn't fair, and that the two of us would have made a much better couple, but what could we do? We were both girls. I should have been a boy. It would have been perfect, because what on earth could two girls possibly do together? Like Running Bear and Little White Dove, I loved her with a love as big as the sky. But there was a deep and raging river between us, and it just about broke my heart. Two girls couldn't possibly do anything real together, except be very, very good friends. Did I mention that we were very innocent and naive? We got a bit older, we got our P-plates, and we got a bit more adventurous. We even started driving down to Sydney. One night in particular stands out in my memory. Jenny and Peter, my best male friend from school, took me to the midnight screening of the Rocky Horror Picture Show in the city. Quite frankly, it blew my little Mormon synapses. Men kissing men, women kissing women, men dressed up in women's clothes. I knew it was all perverted and wrong, but I was so fascinated and enthralled, and damn it, I just wanted to live in that film. Little added note, Susan Sarandon's breasts rock. She changed my life. Anyway, back to the text. At 19, I came out to friends, family, and church. Some of it sucked, but mostly it was okay. Most of my friends had guessed anyway. In fact, the only person who was shocked was my mother. Don't ask, it was messy. Still hadn't even kissed a woman yet, but I just knew. Knew what I was, knew what I wanted to do, just couldn't find anyone to do it with. By the time I was 21, I had also discovered coffee, alcohol and soft drugs. Woohoo! The other memorable event of my 21st year was that I fell in love. It was well overdue, and I was more than ready for it. I guess the adolescent hormones finally decided to kick in. Garrison Keillor once said that people brought up in a fundamentalist religion have a very low excitement threshold, and he's so right. The first time I kissed this woman, my stomach flipped around like an acrobat. By the time we actually slept together, I was so ready for it, I could have burst. I was like a learner driver suddenly being put behind the wheel of a V8 beast, crunching the gears and kangaroo hopping down the street with an idiot grin on my face. I didn't know exactly what I was doing, but I was loving it. Unlike my unrequited love for Jenny, long story, if you want to know more, buy my book, you cheap bastards. That first relationship was gloriously reciprocated. She was the first person to ever give me flowers, orange tiger lilies. I remember them vividly. After that first night together, I didn't stop smiling for 2 days. I smiled so much my cheeks hurt. Our relationship lasted almost 2 years and was the best thing that had ever happened in my young life. Better yet, we're still friends. I found myself making the classic mistake of sleeping with my straight friends. The way it usually happened was we'd both get very drunk, fall into bed together and wake up to one of those awful, awful, ego-destroying conversations. I don't know why that happened. I was really drunk. I mean, I like you as a friend and everything, but I don't think I'm like, that. It was an accident and it won't happen again. Quick note, quite a percentage of them ended up being gay after all. Ha! Just not with me. I sometimes suspect that I was being used, subconsciously, as a safe experiment. At times I felt like the homosexuality tester kit. Just add alcohol, and if the other person turns red, it's a negative result. Geez, who thanks? Now I know I'm straight. See you around. A question I'm asked a lot in interviews is how come I'm not more bitter and angry? Here is my theory. When the straw that should have broken my back finally fell, my reaction was, oh, this is just getting ridiculous now. I refuse to take this seriously anymore. More wine for my friends, and bring on the fatted calf. Cheers, big ears, and here's looking up your kilt. The best revenge in life is always to be happier and have more fun than the f*** who tried to f*** you over. When I was 27, I thought that if Newton's third law of motion applied to human life, and that for every action there was indeed an equal and opposite reaction, then I was due quite a few good years. And you know what? I reckon it's happening. Life is pretty damn fine. I'm in my own little house with a white picket fence. Seriously, it makes me laugh. And the girl I love. We're all out to all and sundry and as happy as Larry Emder. We have straight friends, queer friends, bi friends, and asexual as a pillow friends. We don't care as long as they're fun. I read somewhere that the best way to bring about the world you want to live in is to pretend that you already live in it and treat people accordingly. To any young confused folk out there, just hang on. Life gets so much better. I reckon half the problem with teen suicide is stupid adults saying, ah, the teens, best years of your life, lad. Enjoy it while you can, because it is so completely and utterly wrong. Teen years suck, man, really suck, and the 20s aren't much better. But from 30 on, it gets really bloody grass. If I had to use just 2 words to sum up my ever-loving, queer, old, weird-ass life, it would be simply marvellous. I thank you. I got a round of applause just for reading.
That was Australian comic author activist Sue-Ann Post, recorded by John Frame of Queer Radio in Brisbane. Post's most recent book is The Confession of an Unrepentant Lesbian Ex-Mormon, published by ABC Books in Sydney. For more info online about Sue-Ann, log on to www.sue-annpost.com.au. That's sue-annpost.com.au.
Poet Catherine Lee Bates coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Catherine Lee Bates was born in Massachusetts in 1859. She graduated from Wellesley College in 1885 and stayed on to teach English. There, she met history professor Catherine Coman, and the two became bound as one. Because female professors were poorly paid, both women also wrote books and articles. During a summer teaching job in Colorado, Bates traveled to the top of Pikes Peak. Inspired by the majestic view, she wrote a poem entitled America the Beautiful. With this poem's popularity, it was set to music by Samuel Ward. This afforded the couple a steady income and a custom-built house near Wellesley College. In 1915, after Komen's death, Bates expressed her loss saying, quote, "So much of me died with Catherine Komen that I'm not quite sure whether I'm alive or not." Bates herself died in 1929, having touched so many lives from sea to shining sea. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRAR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Dustin Richardson.
This is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. For those of us who are already out, stay tuned for the next program.
Just who is behind the Edgar and Lambda Literary Award-winning Benjamin Justice books? This Way Out's Steve Pride donned his trench coat and best noir voice to track down the gay man of mysteries and interrogate him about truth, justice, and the WeHo way.
I read my first Benjamin Justice mystery 10 years ago, a few weeks after moving to Los Angeles, City of Angels. It featured a former journalist living in the Norma Triangle of West Hollywood. Flash forward, a decade later, author John Morgan Wilson has become a friend of mine, and I can't help but notice that he is a former journalist living in the Norma Triangle of West Hollywood. Makes you think, don't it?
I'm John Morgan Wilson. I'm a writer. I've written in a number of fields: journalism, screenwriting, documentary TV writing, short stories, and mystery writing. And I've got a new mystery novel out, Rhapsody in Blood, the seventh novel in my Benjamin Justice mystery series, which has won an Edgar Award and 3 Lambda Literary Awards. And Rhapsody in Blood, number 7, and I'm working on an 8th one.
So who is Benjamin Justice, really?
Benjamin Justice is a washed-up newspaper reporter who was ruined by a Pulitzer scandal when he was a reporter for the Los Angeles Times. The story he fabricated was exposed. It ruined him. And so he remains this man who still has all his investigative instincts intact and sharp and still has a very strong sense of justice and the underdog, but will never be able to work as a journalist again because his credibility's ruined. So he ends up working with his friend, crime reporter Alexandra Templeton, helping to solve, or sometimes solving, some of LA's most baffling crimes.
John, there are so many similarities between you and Benjamin Justice.
When I sat down to write my first novel, Simple Justice, I knew that I wanted my protagonist to be gay, and I wanted him to live in West Hollywood in the neighborhood where I lived, for a couple of reasons. One, I was tired of doing research after being a reporter for so many years. I wanted to really write fiction and not have it driven by research. And I also wanted to try to write in a more honest way than I had written before. When you're a journalist, it's easy to hide behind facts and figures and other people's quotations, but fiction is much more revealing of who the author is. Even if you're writing a character that you think is very much unlike who you are, you end up revealing a lot about yourself anyway.
Let's talk about John Morgan Wilson for a moment. When did you know you were gay?
I was born in 1945, right at the end of the war. I'm a war baby. So I came of age in the 1960s, and for gay men and women, that was still a very repressed time, as you know. The repression, both social and personal, what we did to ourselves, was so severe, you could operate in those days with a kind of denial. You almost dared not accept the fact that you were gay. I grew up in a very conservative household. I was an athlete in high school and college. I was the captain of my wrestling team in high school and college. I absolutely could not be gay. No way I could be gay. And I dated women exclusively till I was 25. It was probably as I got toward my last year in college, and certainly right after I got out of college, that I started to recognize and acknowledge feelings that I had been burying in myself with absolutely the most fierce resolve, as so many people did in those days. When I was about 25 years old, I went to Europe expressly with the goal of meeting a man and seeing if this is really who I was and what I wanted. And in fact, I did in Spain get seduced by a young man named Salvador. And I knew this is who I am, and it's time to stop lying and stop being dishonest and stop living my life to please other people and stop worrying about what everyone else thinks I should be and how I should live. I was really starting to come into my own. I'd been publishing an alternative newspaper at that point for a couple of years and writing a lot about honesty in politics and writing a lot about social issues and writing a lot about liberation. But I wasn't liberated myself personally, and I just knew it was time. And I came back from Europe, and I just came out in a huge rush to my straight friends, my family. And I was marching in the streets in 1972 in the second gay pride parade down Hollywood Boulevard, long before it was fun, safe, or fashionable.
John, I don't want to beat a dead horse because of the obvious zoning regulations, but I have to return once again to the question of how much John Morgan Wilson is in Benjamin Justice. Because quite frankly, I've never seen you together.
When I wrote Simple Justice, and I hate to talk about Simple Justice too much because it's out of print, but when I finished the first draft of Simple Justice, I thought I'd just been writing a pretty good murder mystery, and what I realized I was really writing about was grief, and in particular, grief in the age of AIDS. And I had lost my lover to AIDS in 1987. A lot of my grief and unresolved issues around that, anger, depression, sadness, really expressed itself in that first book. I learned in writing that book and in the next book that if I could find material, find elements in the plot and in the character and the character's life that I could connect to emotionally on a deep level, it would sustain me as a writer, it would sustain my interest, it would keep me involved, and it would make for better writing and a better story. And I've done that ever since. So I've tried to find in each new book something within the story material, character plot, that I really could connect with deeply and profoundly. It just helps me write the book, and I hope it makes for a better book.
This has been a conversation with John Morgan Wilson. More information on this award-winning mystery writer can be found at johnmorganwilson.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Kareem Ferguson, Tanya Kane Perry, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, John Frame, Judd Proctor, and Brian Burns with Dustin Richardson, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out anytime exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from you, our listeners, and we thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some special CD thank you gifts. You can email us at tworadio@aol.com or postal us at Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on 5KIX, Kangaroo Island, South Australia, KSOW, Cottage Grove, Oregon, WEOS, Geneva and Ithaca, New York, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Please do stay tuned.